winter na galva agus fáltrú dí go ag talks an amhain John Morley ag teacht a nuasar an glár a neamh ná. €79 million ash dieback scheme set to be approved. Athan Rye Primary School to hold fundraising day on behalf of Narcolepsy Ireland. Lás na Bealtaine, a May Festival of Food kicks off in Galway. The Western Rail Corridor receives European funding. We have the Gratham Gearlista 2024, which has been announced, featuring a diverse range of Galway businesses. We discuss the election with On Commission Taukan. We have the Garda slot. We discuss eye and ear health with Specsavers, trending topics, the Evergreen slot, and music mornings. This time, the turn of Joachim Coder. All this plus a lot more coming up on Galway Talks. Good morning. Good morning, and you're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley. And if you want to get a text and WhatsApp into us, you can do on our number 086 38 33 553. Phone Siobhan on reception on 091 77 0077, and email comments at galwaybayfm.ie. It is Tuesday the 30th of April, and you're welcome into the programme. We're starting with a big announcement because €79 million in funding of the ash dieback scheme is set to be approved by Cabinet. To discuss this further, I'm joined on the line by Independent Councillor here in Galway, Geraldine Donoghue. Geraldine, good morning. And this is something you've been campaigning for a long time. Are you glad to see Cabinet moving on this today?
Good morning, John, and thanks for having me on and this important issue. I do. I cautiously welcome the £79.5 million package for farmers. But there's always a but, isn't there? There was no mention on this deal of any of the roadside ash that I have campaigned and advocated for landowners, homeowners over the last number of years. And therein is, I suppose, a major hazard as we drive around the country and the county. Indeed, you see the ash memorials, the roadside ash memorials. You can't drive anywhere now, but you see them. They're so visible and noticeable. So there's no mention of this. And I do, it is welcome to hear of this for the farmers that are affected. You know, there's so many pension plans, investments that farmers, home landowners have over the years. And I do welcome it. It's good. But, you know, it is only a preliminary announcement. Mm. You know, it'll be going to Cabinet today. And, you know, as I said, I don't know, you know, what is going to be the after this. You know, the devil will be in the detail, really. And I leave it up to the farmers themselves to tease that out. But I suppose, in a way, you know, it is election fever now. Pressure came to bear, I'd say, out in the doors. You know, I was getting a good bit of it as well myself. You know, what's going to happen? And we're not getting any, I suppose, they weren't getting any heed, the people that had the plantations. So it is an election year. You know, I suppose that's democracy. And people have voiced their concern, and I certainly have over the last number of years, and advocated for homeowners, landowners,
do we know
property
though,
owners, and the plantations.
Do we know, though, that landowners are not getting anything? Because according to what we're hearing from Cabinet this morning is that government is set to approve this €79.5 million package for farmers and landowners whose forests have been impacted by ash dieback. So what are your concerns in terms of landowners? That
The landowners might be the ones that might have a pension plan. They may have an investment. The landowners I'm on about is the roadside ones.
Okay.
That isn't mentioned. The landowners would be the people that would have a plantation. They may not necessarily, you may have a couple of acres of ash there, and you may not necessarily be a farmer, but you invested in this back X amount of years ago, and that's who will be, I understand from reading this, that's who will be part of this package. But it is the roadside ash that isn't mentioned in this, and that is the concern that I have raised for the people that have contacted me, and indeed they didn't even contact me because I see myself the hazard.
Okay.
That's what I see. So look, while I welcome it, I cautiously welcome it, but again, you know, we have to keep the focus on it, on what are they going to, and in addition to that, John, as well, like, who's going to dismantle these huge trees? That's a very big risk. You know, they have to be dismantled from the top down. You can't just go in and fell a tree, as I have mentioned in numerous meetings.
Surely it'll provide work for tree surgeons around the area.
Yes, but you have to be highly trained in that. You know, I went over to the UK and I saw the dismantling. It's mechanical dismantling. You know, you just can't go in and start filling it there with chainsaws. You know, as I've always said, a good cut will save a life. A bad cut will take a life. That's how serious this is. It's mechanical dismantling. And, you know, I don't know how we got enough of manpower, woman power on the ground to actually deal with that. So while I do welcome it, you know, we'll wait to see. As I said, it's a preliminary announcement, 79.5 million. You know, there's a lot of investors in forestry have been devastated by this fungal disease. Mm. That their investments have wilted.
So what?
That's the reality of it.
In essence, what it's going to do, and I'll go through some of the details here, it provides a €5,000 per hectare payment to farmers who clear ash sites and re-establish new forests in their place. And it's an addition to an existing €160 million scheme that pays farmers to clear their ash forest and replant them with a different species. So it's a significant amount of funding to help this process. In fairness to the government and the Exchequer, they have to draw the line somewhere in the sand. I hear what you're saying, the safety concerns in terms of the roadside stuff, but is that a relatively small a number of trees in compared to the big forests?
Well, yeah, but you can't put a cost on a life.
Okay.
You just can't. You couldn't, like, you know,
is it not the farmer or the owner's responsibility to deal with that tree themselves under the current laws?
Under the 1993 Roads Act, yes. They changed it back then. And unfortunately, that you know,
is the landowner or the farmer. The responsibility is on the landowner or the farmer in that regard.
Homeowner, landowner, personal property owner. That's who the responsibility. If you have a tree in your garden there outside your own house, it is your responsibility to deal with that tree if it's a hazard under the 1993 Roads Act. However, I have met some people that are advanced in years. Their only income is derived from their pension. And that might be only 200 something a week. They are getting estimates of 4,000 and 5,000 to have these trees removed. They don't afford. They can't actually afford that. And on top of that, then it's the cost of it, the hazard of it. There's some telephone wires, ESB wires going to. This is a highly skilled job, so you can't just go and ask, we say, the neighbour that might be handy with a chainsaw to go in and take down a tree that might be a hazard. I really would have liked to have, we'll say, you know how you have the SEAI, the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland, they have a register of approved installers doing the various installations of the energy retrofits, we call it. Something like that would be good for people that could go on. They have their insurance, they have the public liability, they have the employer's liability, and there's also a traffic management that has to be put in place when you're taken down. It's a very highly skilled job. So that's what I've been advocating all along. If there was some sort of a register of approved as you call them there, the tree surgeons. Mm. But it is a very skilled job. I certainly wouldn't like to see some of, you know, we've general operators in the council there going out during a storm. They go out, they see a tree. The tree might be, the least of the worst, it could be a branch up higher. That is, and I've asked the council, you know, to pull together a task force that we could deal with this. We've got a motion into the government. They'll be written into the government and a motion again. Mm. But, you know, sure, like, I'll be writing in and putting pen to paper and saying, look, we really need to take this very, very serious. Now, they've had 13, 14 years to get prepared for this. Mm. This isn't an overnight thing, John.
I know.
This is going on for you. They've had ample time. They could have ring fence funding for this, for, you know, leave a little bit aside every year. They knew this wasn't of the people's making. The disease came in on saplings that wasn't quarantined. So it wasn't just something like COVID that was sprung upon us. It actually was, they had loads of time. But it's the Minister for Agriculture now that is tasked with dealing with this, you know.
In fairness, they are stepping up to the plate now. I know another part of this is that under the package set to be approved by the government today, it represents a substantial increase in payments to the growers who have complained that previous schemes failed to cover their clearance costs or compensate them for the timber loss. But another issue where the growers are aggrieved by is that they wanted the full economic value of the trees they planted had they reached maturity. So for growers, that they're not fully satisfied with what they're hearing today either.
No, they haven't. And growers have lost confidence in the sector too. They haven't. I mean, I've met, you know, investors or farmers, we'll say, in stroke investors that have 25 acres of plant of ash. Its soul is trying to look at 25 acres dead. And there's your that's your pension plan.
Yeah.
And I mean, I honestly, I don't know how. I'd be, it's soul destroying for many of them that I've spoken to, absolutely soul destroying to look out at that wilting over the years, 13 years wilting. They could have easily come up with this, but look at the local elections, European elections are only a few weeks time now, so pressure came to bear, democracy, I'm sure they're getting it out in the doors, the government parties. So look at, while I cautiously welcome it, you know, it is preliminary, but again, I'll be asking now, where is the money for the dismantling of the roadside ones? You know, we see them, you drive around yourself, and that goes for any tree, not just ash. If there is a hazard there, it is up to the landowner. But just one point I just wanted to clarify before I finish there, John, was, you know, I have met many, we'll say, constituents of my own, you know, they see the council come out and they cut the verges, and but they don't do the hedges, we'll call it, and they don't do the trees, so they just cut the verges. But the majority of people, you know, that are driving around, they see the council out cutting the verges. Many people don't know a verge from a hedge. So they see the council out and they think, oh, sure, that's the council. But they don't realise that the Roads Act actually puts the responsibility back on John and Mary Public.
Okay.
That's the reality of it. So when they see them out doing the verge, they think, oh, that's great.
Is there not a responsibility on them to make sure they don't disturb the wildlife in the area, that maybe birds nesting, etc.?
Oh, of course. Well, that's during the growing season. Do you know what I mean? But if a tree is a hazard and it's dead, there's nothing going to be nesting above it anyway. Sure, there isn't a leaf on them. You know, you won't see, there's no camouflage in it for birds, the ash trees, so they're not going to nest in it. But we'll say for other trees, that is a hazard. Well, then if there's a hazard, it's a hazard. You have to remove it. You have a responsibility. God forbid, you can't put a price on a life.
Mm. Okay, my final point on this as well. Mm-hmm. Ash has been a big part of the production of Hurleys and different things. And a lot of businesses have been affected by this, as well as the tree growers.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's another... I mean, another debate for maybe another day, what's going to replace the ash, the clash of the ash. Now it's called the crack of the ash, as I call it, because it's cracking all over the country. Do you know what I mean?
That's all right.
I don't know what's going to replace it with. I honestly don't know. You know, there is other types of Hurleys there. I met a few young fellas. There's, I think they had bamboo. They had the other other plastic type one.
Fiber,
I can't remember the name.
But,
it escapes me now. But the crack of the ash.
Independent Councillor Geraldine Donoghue, thank you for joining us on Goa Talks.
Thanks very much, Sean. Thank you.
What are your thoughts on this? Get them into us now on 086-383-553. Phone Siobhan or reception on 091-770-077 and email comments@goabayfm.ie. We're coming back and we're talking about a lovely initiative that's taking place in a school in Athenry. They're holding a fundraising day on behalf of Narcolepsy Ireland.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway on the Monavay Road. A new way to car shop.
Good morning, welcome back into Galway Talks with John Morley. And now I'm going to give you the chance to win, because it's the Connacht GAA Championship. And the big question is, will Galway beat Mayo? The Galway senior football team take on Mayo in this year's Connacht GAA Championship final on Sunday at 4 o'clock in Pearse Stadium. The tribesmen will be bidding for three in a row Connacht titles against their age-old rivals. Supporters are advised to buy their tickets in advance. Tickets are available from gaa.ie/tickets or at selected SuperValue and Centra stores. No tickets are on sale at the venue on the day. GAA, where we all belong. Now, if you want to be in with a chance of winning a pair of tickets for the Terrace, you have to text in maroon and white and do so straight away to 086-383-553. That's maroon and white to 086-383-553 and do so straight away to win a pair of tickets for the Terrace this Sunday for the Connacht final. What a game that's going to be. Now, though, on to my next topic, because I'm joined on the line by Elaine Monson, who's a fifth class teacher in the school in Athenry, the Scuil Croí Naofa. And we're also joined by Naomi Grant, who is the mother of Emma. And you're both very welcome onto the programme today. Elaine, I might start with you first. Talk to us about this wonderful programme that's happening in your school in terms of fundraising for Narcolepsy Ireland.
Hi, John. How are you? Good morning. Thanks for giving us this opportunity to talk about this. I'm a fifth class teacher here in Skullcreen AFA in Athenry, and we have two fifth classes, and we have a child in our class called Emma who has narcolepsy and cataplexy. And we decided this year that we were going to fundraise for Emma, and the fifth class girls wanted to show their support for her, and they came up with some amazing ideas. So we're actually having a pajama day next Friday, and we're holding a raffle all this week as well, to raise money for Narcolepsy Ireland, which is a charity that was started by her, Emma's grandfather and her aunt.
Brilliant. We also have Emma's mother on the line as well. We're joined by Naomi Grant. Naomi, it's great to see the school coming in behind your daughter in this way and for such a great cause as well.
Hi. Yes, it's unbelievable. I mean, I couldn't ask for more. The school has been so supportive since the get-go. When Emma was diagnosed at first, she was only 5 years old. And so she was in junior infants. And since then, we've had such amazing support. And this year, Elaine, you know, she's getting older and she's going to be going into secondary school. So we were discussing it. And Elaine was thinking awareness is needed because it's such a rare condition. So this took place, and it's grown legs. The community of Athenry have been unbelievably supportive. So, and all her classmates have been exceptional as well. Just passing on the word and explaining to people what narcolepsy is and how it affects people day to day. So yeah, it's amazing. I couldn't ask for more. They're such a good school.
For people listening today who don't know what narcolepsy is, can you explain it to them in simple terms?
Yeah, so basically, like a lot of people would think narcolepsy is just a case that you're tired all the time and you need to sleep, which is not really the case. So it's like it's a neurological disorder. So basically, Emma doesn't get restful sleep. So whereas we will go to sleep, we get restful sleep. Emma kind of functions on as if she hasn't slept for 72 hours. So if you can imagine, if you wake up in the morning and you're tired, you haven't slept well, how you feel, multiply it. And, you know, it really affects her day to day. And she has type 1 narcolepsy and she has cataplexy with it, which is a loss of her muscle tone. And it's quite severe, so she's very limited in activities and what she can do. So she is 11 now, but it's just, you know, the awareness is needed for any other people that are out there, because believe it or not, there's like 80% of people go undiagnosed with narcolepsy because there's different strains of it. You don't necessarily have the physical symptoms of it. It could be just this, not just the sleeplessness, because that's, you know, it's torture. It is a form of torture, not being able to sleep. So it's just to raise awareness. But she also has sleep paralysis and she has night terrors and things like that. So she has a lot of medication to get her through the day. So it's greatly improved with medication. So, but it's still, you know, she's actually effectively missed 60% of her wakeful childhood. So it is, it's awful for her, and it's awful for anyone. I mean, there are many people out there, not many kids in Ireland. She would have been the youngest person in Ireland to have it. So rare. So it took a while to get diagnosed, but nothing like other people. Sometimes it can take 7 years. But Emma's was so physically obvious. She was in hospital, and we were just lucky that in Galway there was Professor Nicholas Allen. He had trained in Temple Street in the neurology department, and he had come across narcolepsy before. So he was quick to diagnose it. I mean, it was in a matter of, we were in the hospital for about a month and he figured out what it was. So yeah.
Yeah, and Elaine, what sort of supports do you provide there in Skull, Cree, Naif and Athenry to help Emma achieve her full potential with her illness?
Yeah, we have a fantastic SNA team. Emma, I suppose, have all the teachers and the SNAs have been on the journey with Emma since junior infants. We had an amazing SNA, Rosaline DeValley, that retired 2 years ago, that would have been there from junior infants up to 2 years ago. We have Roseanne Trehy now and Margaret Hallisey. We have a great set team headed by Mrs. Cronin, and of course our principal, Mr. Nocton, has been amazing as well. So we have sensory rooms. We have a room that Emma can go to, where she has her own privacy. There's a lovely like cushion there and quilts where she can lie and have a sleep during the day. That can often happen during the day. She just feels like, you know, she gets very tired. She knows the symptoms herself now at this stage. She's in fifth class, so she knows herself when she needs to rest. And an SNA is there on call for her at any time that's needed, and there to also support her and be with her if we go anywhere outside the school. So we've huge support. She has her own room to go into, like I said, to rest, and a place that she feels very comfortable going to, which is more important than anything. And more important, I suppose, than anything, we have two fifth classes, and she's surrounded by very supportive girls in fifth class. And I have three of them here, John, if you'd be interested in talking to them. These are the committee who have set up our raffle this week and who are spearheading the Pajama Day on Friday. They have been a great support to Emma over the years. They've known her from junior infants. It's Keelan. I have Michaela and I have Anna. So would you like to talk to them? No better people
I will talk
about what we're doing than the committee themselves.
So
I'll put you on to Michaela first and you can ask them a question if you'd like.
Brilliant. Michaela, talk to me about what you're doing in school to help your classmate Emma.
Sorry, can you repeat that?
Yeah, just tell me what you're doing in school to help support your classmate Emma, the fundraising you're doing.
Well, we're doing a pyjama day and we believe that it's very important for the school to be educated on Emma and to kind of understand what narcolepsy actually is. So we have been going around to classes and explaining to them what kind of narcolepsy is. And we're doing a raffle and we've been selling raffle tickets all this week. And we've also knitted Emma a blanket that all fifth class have been knitting, and it's called A Hug for Emma by fifth class.
Brilliant. And I think we also have Keelan and Anna as well. So Keelan, if Keelan's on the phone there, Keelan, do you all look after Emma at school, and what sort of support do you give her?
Yeah, we all look after her in school, and like we know sometimes when she gets tired, and we know when she needs to go for a sleep. And like we were doing gymnastics the other week, and we would walk down and walk back up. But Emma wasn't able to walk back up because she was too tired. So me and Michaela actually went in the car with her back so that she she'd have friends going back and stuff. And we just kind of know when she needs to go for a sleep.
And if I have Anna there as well, Anna, what have you learned about narcolepsy since you've started all of this?
I have learned that it's a lot harder for Emma to do stuff more than us, because we can do sports and not be like tired, or we can just go home and rest. But Emma actually has to like sleep, and she gets very tired by sports and stuff.
I'm going to go back to Emma's mother now, Naomi Grant. Naomi, it's great to see how the other classmates are supporting your daughter in this regard.
Oh, I'm actually sitting here trying not to cry because it's just so lovely. I mean, her friends have been brilliant, like Keelan, Michaela and Anna, and all of her peers in fifth class. It's just so heartwarming because I worry about her in the future, and, you know, I can't protect her much more because she's going into secondary school. So I'm kind of handing the baton over to them to look out for her. And, you know, it's all about inclusivity. I can never say that word. And just making sure that she's looked after, because she misses so much. Like, she genuinely does. You just need to, I think Elaine will say that she probably knew about Emma, but she didn't understand it until she had her in her class to see what an effect and how what a struggle it is.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, there are way worse things out there, but this is quite debilitating for her and for anyone with narcolepsy.
Just in terms of raising awareness, Naomi, what are the telltale signs for people to look out for?
Well, okay, so with Emma, it was quite instant when it happened. So she gained a lot of weight in a very short space of time. She was having, it was as if she wasn't there. It's as if her eyes were gone. She was gone. She couldn't focus on anything. She kept falling asleep. She had really bad night terrors, like sleep paralysis, really bad mood swings, very, very erratic behavior, and muscle weakness. That was the thing that really, you know, it was so obvious. Like, her head would go and she'd have full body collapses. That's what the cataplexy is. So she just literally, any kind of emotion will trigger it, which is kind of cruel in a way, because that's a child learning not to laugh or not to have emotions. So she stunted her reactions to stuff, because once she does laugh, like, she does get very upset. Sometimes she can laugh, she finds something funny, she'll fall to the ground, and she can actually struggle to breathe because her muscles close around her throat. So we have to keep an eye on her the whole time. So she really watches herself in that way. And she has the best laugh when she does laugh, but she has to control it. So. But mainly it's the cataplexy, or the erratic behaviours. And you'll know if your child is constantly falling asleep and they're just not rested at all. You know when you have a child who hasn't slept, they're erratic as well, but it's a different form of erraticness. So,
okay.
Yeah, just to consult anyone. And raising awareness is to try and get some leaflets into doctors' offices, into schools, so teachers are aware. And we have created, as well as what the kids are doing here, I set up an iDonate page, which is past the 2,000 mark this morning. I mean,
brilliant.
Just people are so, you know, it's this community and my family and Derek's family and our friends. They just have seen her journey and other people's. It's not all about Emma. It is to a degree, but it's just about raising awareness for other people. Mm. Yeah, and my sister and my dad were instrumental in setting up the charity. There was a support group there there was a support group on Facebook with really fantastic people, Elaine and Sharon and loads of people, but this was the charity. So, and that was it, that all had to be passed through, so there was a lot of work to do with that. And sorry, I feel like I'm going on here,
but okay.
I have so many people to say thank you to. With the school, Rosaline DeValley, she was like Emma's SNA when this happened all at first. Now she's retired now, but she was like, she just saved us because she was here and she looked after Emma in school, and she was very bad when she was small. And Rosaline just, she was like passing her over to another me. She looked after her like she was her mum. And Miss Comer, who was there from the instant, Miss Murray, Miss Dolan, Miss O'Byrne, Miss Delaney, Miss Greeley, Miss Monson, Roseanne Trehy, Rosaline DeValley, Fergal Nocton, and Katrina Cronin, and Roisin O'Connor, her tutor, and Miss Murray in fifth class as well. So she actually is entitled to, she misses so much school that she gets home tuition. The school put this in place. I mean, we would have applied for it, but we just didn't have the wherewithal to do it. They organised all of this. So she gets 5 hours home tuition every week for everything she misses, so that she keeps up to date with her education, because she may be in school, but she's not able to concentrate.
Mm.
So
mm.
She's a very short attention span as well.
In terms of the iDonate page, where's the best place people want to donate to that, Naomi?
It's iDonate Narcolepsy Ireland. If you just Google that, I'll share a link actually after this, John. So just I have the exact URL, but Narcolepsy Ireland.
Okay.
So iDonate Narcolepsy Ireland. So we just set that up last week, and it's just, as I said, and Elaine said, all the businesses in Athenry, she'll go through, actually, there's a long list of them. They're just amazing, and I just want to thank everyone. It's a condition that is just, it's rare, and it can be invisible if you don't have cataplexy, and it's awful. I see the people who struggle with it who have narcolepsy type 2, and they really struggle because people don't have awareness or any sympathy. They're kind of like, oh, sure, you just need to have a sleep, you'll be grand, and you're just like, oh, so much more than that, you know.
Yeah, well, Naomi, look after yourselves and look after Emma as well. I'm going to go back.
I will.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Naomi. I want to go back to Elaine Monson, though, Emma's fifth class teacher. Elaine, talk us through what's happening now this week in terms of the fundraising. And also, when Emma came to your classroom, what did you learn about narcolepsy yourself?
Yeah, well, I suppose with any child that comes into your class, it's important to educate yourself when you have a child in your class who might have a certain condition. And I had to educate myself. Naomi was great in that. I met with Naomi before the summer break, and she spoke to me, and we put things in place for Emma as in where she would be sleeping, because she was moving classrooms as well. And then more importantly than anything, it was important that we've a split fifth this year, and it was important that her fifth class were aware of her needs. And also, you know, that of I suppose Emma's journey in the morning, that when she comes into school, she might come in at 10, half 10, she mightn't come in at all, and that the children understand why this is. Why, you know, when she would walk through the door at 10 o'clock in the morning or at half 10, it's okay for her, and that they understand that. And, you know, Emma was great. She was very brave. She gave an information day to both fifth classes, spoke to them, and then did a question and answer session at the end with the fifth class. And what I found fantastic about that is, you know, she was asked questions by her peers, questions that we as adults mightn't necessarily be asking her, but are even mentioning when we're teaching the class about narcolepsy. And things like, you know, how do you find when you do sports? Are you able to do sports? We're going to Emerald Park in our school tour. How will you be on the roller coaster with the cataplexy? What is your journey like in the morning? How come you come in at 10 o'clock? And, you know, and she'd explain, no, she gets up at 7 in the morning. She gets dressed just like the rest of her peers in the class. But unlike the rest of her peers, she has to go back and have another nap. And that nap then decides what time she comes into school, or if she is able to come into school at all. And it was just raising awareness and support. And We've knitted an amazing blanket where all the girls in the two fifth classes have knitted a few squares. We've sewn them together. And on Friday, during our pajama day, we're going to give the blanket to Emma. And it's basically a hug from fifth class. So every time she puts it around her, there's squares there from all her peers in fifth class. And it's a big hug from fifth to her, which I think is very symbolic as well. The I Donate page is fantastic. Naomi set it up because the support from Athenry was unbelievable. We have had so much support within the school community, but so many people outside the school community wanted to show their support as well. And that is how they have done it. And as Naomi said, we've raised over 2,000 on that.
Wow.
But the school community, the parents, oh my goodness, the businesses in Athenry have been phenomenal. But that is Athenry. Mm. Athenry come all out when it comes to supporting each other. And I would love, if possible, to run really quickly through some of the businesses that have actually supported us. Would that be okay, John?
Well, we might have to leave that just time-wise, but I'm sure they can all see it on the donations. But look,
they will. They'll see it,
Keep up the great work. Elaine Monson, a fifth-class teacher in Sgwellcreeve, Naifa and Athenry, and also Naomi Grant, Emma's mother. Thank you both for joining us on Galway Talks, and the best of luck with all the fundraising efforts. So if you're in the Athenry area, do go and support that worthy cause for Narcolepsy Ireland. Coming up next, we're looking at the Blasna na Baltana, the food festival which kicks off in Galway. I hope you're not hungry.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Drive happy in Windsor Motor Mall, Galway, with hundreds of used cars to suit your budget.
Good morning, you're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley, and we're looking at food. And I have a hungry belly this morning, I didn't have my breakfast, but anyways, Anna King is the coordinator of Blasna na Baltana. Anna, good morning, you're welcome on to the show today, and I believe this is your second year doing this.
Yeah, absolutely, thanks for having us, John.
Yeah, and in terms of Blasna na Baltana, first tell people about it for those who don't know.
Yeah, well, basically, very briefly, the network was established or evolved, I suppose is a better way of talking about it, from the traditional Galway Food Festival that ran from 2012 to 2019. Mm-hmm. And during COVID, there was an opportunity to really assess what worked and what didn't work with the festival. And even though it was a very popular festival, I suppose some of the issues that were highlighted was, in particular, that there was a lot of momentum and energy that built up around the few days that the festival was on, and then after that everyone kind of packed up and went home. And you know, and I think what came out of the assessment was that there was a real need to support food producers, venues, restaurants, etc., throughout the whole of the year. So we've set up our A Taste of Galway website, which is a network, and we have support running then throughout the year. And as I mentioned earlier, the launch was last May with our May festival.
Okay, so this is running out throughout the whole of May, and it encompasses a lot of businesses from both the city and the county.
That's right, yes. We have a number of cafes, restaurants, pubs involved. And throughout May, we are going to be running a number of different events. I suppose the other thing to highlight is that it's not traders outside, as people often think about festivals. It's actually events that are running in the actual venues themselves. So, for instance, like starting off with the county, we have a really interesting, with this year, we've got two venues who are actually running Irish-speaking events. So I'm very excited about that, to maybe just highlight that there will be a culinary cultural journey through Loch Lurgan to the Aran Islands, which will be a 7-course meal interspersed with history and mythology. So that's happening in Connemara, and that will be a really lovely event.
Mm.
Yeah.
And in terms of, we'll say, the learnings you had from last year to this year, how have you changed the festival? What improvements have you made?
Well, last year on the calendar, we did have a lot of menus that were highlighted and dishes, which people obviously enjoy. But the feedback that we got from customers was that they really enjoyed the more curated events and the kind of food experiences. So we have a lot more of those running this year. We have, for instance, like two tours, one in the city of all the different venues. But we also have a wonderful one happening again out in Connemara, which will involve foraging, visiting different venues, and lots of storytelling, because people love that.
Mm. And it's a great way of different businesses networking in this regard.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the other really popular events last year were pop-ups, which were collaboration between different members. This year we also have a chef swap as well, which is bringing in chefs from other places. This year it's from Boston and from Cork. And absolutely, we have a lovely Italian pasta making with wine, which is two different members collaborating. So yeah, the collaborative aspect of the network is very, very important.
And outside of your work as the coordinator of the festival and doing things like this with me, what will you be doing for the rest of the month of May? What will you be doing for the rest of the month of May in terms of
events,
yeah.
Yeah, okay. So we're launching off the first weekend with a lovely intercultural event, which is the celebration of Brazilian cuisine in Salt Hill, which would be really lovely. We have lots of wine and tapas events occurring. As I mentioned, we have the chef swap. We have a pop-up oyster bar. We have a Galway boat tour, even, which would be lovely, followed by a seafood platter. We have the perfect summer bubbles tasting, cheese tasting. We have a really interesting event, actually, that is going to explore traditional Irish whiskey making and its relationship to poutine. So that's a really interesting one. I think I mentioned earlier that we have a Galway City tour as well.
And it's great because Galway is so renowned for food and good culinary experiences already. So it's great that this is going to be highlighted across the whole month, and it'll give a good boost to businesses going into the summer season.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the supports that we hope to come out of this moving forward, is that we have such a rich culinary sort of expertise within the region and city, and we really hope that our network will enable us to really highlight Galway as a centre for food experiences along the Wild Atlantic Way. So we have been working with PR consultants as well, and we're really hoping to promote Galway not just locally but nationally and internationally moving forward.
Because it is a regional festival, so it covers both the city and the county.
Yeah, we have 25 producers involved. We have 10 hotels involved, and we've got 80 members altogether. So there's a broad range of people throughout the city and the county.
How did you get involved yourself in this, Annex? I know your background is creative writing.
Yeah, well, I'm just really interested in food. I have a book published with Chef Martin Ruffley, who is involved in the network as well. And I've been following the work at the Galway Food Festival and Food on the Edge for a long time, and I just really wanted to get involved just to keep involved in the food network.
Yeah. Brilliant. And if people want to get more details or book experiences, I presume you have to book a lot of them. How do they do that?
The best place is to go onto our website, www.atasteofgalway.com, and then click onto the festival, which will take you to the events calendar. All of the events and many more that I've mentioned today are there in terms of each week, and you can click on the information, and then that will either provide a link for booking, a booking link, or it'll provide you with contact details.
And will you be front and centre yourself at a lot of the events, or are you working behind the scenes mostly?
A bit of both. I'll be making sure I visit some of the venues for sure.
Brilliant. Anna King, the coordinator of the Blas na Baltana Food Festival, which runs all throughout May here in Galway. Thank you for joining us on Galway Talks.
Thank you.
To come on the programme today, though, it's very busy. The Western Rail Corridor receives European funding. As well as that, we're looking at because their Gradam Gearlista has been announced. It features a diverse range of businesses and organisations here in Galway. We're discussing the elections that are coming up, the European and locals, with on Commission Tauchan. And Miss Justice Mary Baker joins us to talk all about that. We have our Garda Sot as always. We're looking at ear and eye health as well with the crew in Specsavers. So all that plus lots more coming up in the programme, including some live music, because we'll have Joachim Coder joining us. We have trending topics and the Evergreen Slot as well. Now, a reminder, we're coming to you from Clifton this Friday, the 3rd of May. We're broadcasting from the Woodfield Hotel between 9 in the morning and 12 in the afternoon. If you want to get involved in that programme, you can phone us on reception straight away and give your name to 091 77 0077. You can email comments at goibayfm.ie, and you can even text and WhatsApp us to 086 38 33 553. It's already a very busy programme in Clifton. We're looking at the Arts Festival. We have a few characters coming on. We're looking at history and archaeology. We're looking at a great fundraising event that's happening locally in the area as well, and speaking to different community organisations. There are some sporting legends joining us. We have the local Kyoltis branch who'll be doing some live music with us as well. So all that plus lots more coming up on Community Matters this Friday. Reminder as well that 2 weeks from this Friday, we'll be in Port Tumna. So if you're in the Port Tumna area and you want to get involved in Community Matters, do email us straight away. Now, some of the other events that'll be happening across the station. A reminder that each Thursday here on Galway Talks at 11:30, I present Ours to Protect. It's highlighting how we can work together to protect the environment. And this week, I speak to Nicola Conley, who is the founder of Nunaya, about her regenerative business model. For more information, go over to galwaybayfm.ie, click on the Ours to Protect image on the homepage, and you can even try the ecological footprint calculator. Ours to Protect is brought to you by Galway Bay FM, the IBI, and funded by Commission Na Mban with the television licence fee. Check out ourstoprotect.ie for more information on that. And Galway Greats, we don't have a Galway Greats next Monday because it is, of course, the bank holiday, but we have someone lined up for the following Monday who will be very interesting to all involved here in Galway City. More on that a little later on the week as well. And today, Trending Topics takes to the airwaves every Tuesday at 11:10 on Galway Talks. In this segment, I'm joined by a member of our digital team to delve into the latest current trends online. From social media crazes to new digital advancements, Trending Topics will provide an insightful look into trends that are making waves in Galway and beyond. And today we discuss a number of topical issues on the online world. If you have a trend you want to discuss on Trending Topics, you can contact us on our lines as well. So if you want to get involved in the programme, I'm just going to read some of the texts coming into us. John, could you please ask all those running for elections not to keep posting their leaflets through my letterbox? Even though I have no junk mail on my letterbox, they keep posting them. There are plenty of platforms to push their agenda without creating waste. They go from letterbox straight into my bin. So if you want to get your comments into us, do so straight away. A lot of people texting in maroon and white for the tickets for the Galway match. If you want to be on a chance of winning a terrace tickets to the Galway match, do send in maroon and white to 086-38-33-553. We're back after news.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway and get a free 3-year warranty on hundreds of used cars.